accession number 19660, reel 3.
Bill Harvey, reel 3.
We're on the equipment.
Yeah.
Well, all the equipment was mostly First World War stuff, what we had at that time. With the exception of the pouches, like you were saying, they came out in 1938. But we didn't get them over there till later on. We went over with the old pouches. And all our stuff was First World War stuff. The putties. Putties come so far up and box breeches, you know. It was to box them. That's how we were. And the trouble is, when you go out on patrol, you go through ditches, you go any muddy, slushy, right, you're soaking wet and they tighten up on your legs, you know. And then they relax once they dry. They just dry on you. And then when the time we went out, you were soaking wet through. You had a ground sheet, but that mostly protect you underneath, actually, which you slept, if you slept in there, because we were sleeping and on the rummages in the trenches at what we called parapets. And we used to cut a little hole so far down where the water won't rise, you see. And then we built these parapets, but we still cut these holes in. And it's just enough if you're on watch, you're in one of these, or if you're off watch, so on the, it's like in the trench, you see. You had duck boards so far up from when there's water underneath, you see, and you used to have a pump going to pump, keep the water low while we were in it. if we left it, any time for longer, it used to come back, it used to be flooded. So it did pump the water out again. Keep pumping the water, had little donkey engines. I think the Canadian, but the good thing, you just connected them up with your pipe, put your pipe in, your extraction, and used to pump it out. And you used to sleep in your, just wrap your ground sheet round you, in your clothes, you always in your, you couldn't undress in any case. You just cut a bit out in the ground and sleep in it. But I always say, I do now, it's the worst thing we could have done. We all rushed into Belgium. At first, Belgium wouldn't have us in, you see. The first scare for Belgium was just near before Christmas. And when we asked to be allowed to come through, take up positions, you know, good positions, and get dug in, he won't let us in, you see. So we had to wait until he actually made his push. It was too late, really too late, because you was, well, in other words, you was buggered the time you got there. You was up all night, all day, not a bit of sleep. And you just kept yourself, you was like a zombie after them. That was how I was, anyhow, on my side of it. As I say, we were falling back. What for? Apparently it was to stop us from getting surrounded. Again, we were surrounded about 3 times, I think. Then the unit seemed to disintegrate in different places. So many got taken prisoner. We took so many prisoners, and the Germans attacked. And this is how it was going on, you see. And that's a point I don't like to bring up, so I won't mention it, really. I don't think I should mention it, really, because the bloke is dead now. It was just a thing, but the Germans retaliated and shot 20 of our blokes in the head. They took them prisoner and just bound their hands round and back and shot them in the head.
Did you know anything about that at the time?
Yeah.
What did you know about it at the time?
I knew it because, that was going around. This was afterwards. This was afterwards I got. So this, as we were going around things, you know, and things were said, But I know that for the simple reason Captain Barclay said he would shoot his own men if he caught them drinking out any of the dikes. Of course, the water was all polluted. Well, it was that Thursday, you had no water. It was a steaming hot day. And where we took up positions, that I'd put my mess tin in the dike and just moved the green stuff around, made it a bit clear. And I just dropped my tablets, because you carried some tablets, water tablets with you. Just dropped my tablets in and let that drain out and drink it. I'm still here. I drank it. And he warned us, if he saw anybody, he will shoot them, his own men. He was that sort of person, Captain Barclay was. But what happened in this retaliation? You see, the people don't say you don't get to know anything about that. It's that, oh, I'd rather you turn this one off, really. Yeah. Right, now we were falling back, and we were just making a more or less practically on your own. You're in a gang of you, around a half a dozen, they were different companies. So all the battalion was mixed up. And they said, right, we're making towards Dunkirk, make our way towards Dunkirk. And we're fighting rear guard as we were going, and then so many falling back, and then we're falling back. And that's how it went on until we were bombed, harassed and everything, until we got in the Dunkirk area. And then we got in the army defensive area, because they put a defensive ring round Dunkirk, you see. And then we got in, and we were put in where we can use, anything we can use. They used us as infantry, because they were all units there. Anyway, when we got to Dunkirk, the army was in disarray. They kept it orderly as far as possible. You got your senior NCOs that, once they got their orders, and that was it. And I was just on the Dean side of Dunkirk, which is outside of Dunkirk, actually. And they were all doing the same, digging themselves in. Jerry was bombing as much as they could, because as much then. And the occasion, we very much did not see a lot of the RAF. There used to be several, you know, about three or four, just come over and dive around. And if there's Germans there, they're trying to chuck them out, if you know what I mean, a little air battle, and then they would bugger off or something like that. But they'd already done the damage. They'd dropped the bomb discriminately all along the beaches, where the troops were. Now, I got blown up again while I was there, and I don't know whether I was concussed or anything like that, but the thing is, they took me right to a field dressing station, because I was... I don't know. I had a few shrapnel wounds, only a couple of pieces in my leg from shrapnel, and I was in the first aid dressing station, you know, what we call the first. You go to the first one, then you go to the next, the hospital one, you see. So they were pretty organised with that, the medical side.
Were you in much pain?
Pardon?
While you were in much pain?
Oh, yes, my legs. I didn't think my legs were on, actually, at the time. And then they would talk about evacuation. You see, but I could still walk, but I couldn't, shall I say, you lost a bit of your senses, do you know what I mean? Actually, and you're wondering. Anyhow, they took me to a field station. Took me, a rear field station. And other than that, my mind that's where my mind blank, in other words. Thing that anyhow, they injected me. The medical officer injected me. And when I come round, I was on a on a stretcher. And they said, you're going there, we're going tonight when the tide goes out. Not the tide comes out, the tide comes in. As the tide was coming in, so they'd taken him out. On the little boats there. And I was put on a French boat going over. It was, whether it was a French destroyer, I don't know, but it was an old boat. And we lay all over the decks. And I ended up at Dover. And what they did, they went in a hospital train. And I was more or less hospitalised. This is after when we came back from Dunkirk. You know, everything was in disarray there. I didn't have a ref, I only had just a battle dress, trousers and a shirt on, that's all I had. Apparently they'd taken them off in the hospital. And we all, they got this hospital train, there must have been, I don't know, they put them south, north, south, east and west, these hospital trains. And I was injected again, for everyone else. And I didn't wake up till I got till the train was in York. And I knew where, and I could focus things then. Do you know what I mean? I think I was concussed mostly. I couldn't focus things. And we ended up at in Edinburgh. And there's a hospital there, I'm just trying to think the name of it. Well, it's just outside Edinburgh. It was a hospital, and all the wounded there, people, one bloke, he walked to me, and he was shot here, and his arm was split right up here.
He was shot between the fingers, you mean?
Yeah, went right in his fingers and shot right up his arm. You won't believe it. And he could pull it open like a spring clip. And it absolutely stunk. And they were, I think about how many died. You wasn't dressed properly, if you know what I mean. You wasn't, your wounds weren't tended to at all. They'd just been bandaged on the, from the field office there. And they didn't do anything on the train. They just give you water. And if you could eat anything, they'll give you soup on the train. And anyhow, Bangor Hospital come to me now, isn't it? Funny, isn't it? Bangor Hospital. And I was, they kept me sedated, in other words, if you know what I mean. And when I was bit better, you know, coming around a bit better, and then I'd been there about 5 weeks. I didn't know a lot, but when I saw a lot of the blokes that were in there, no arms and no legs, you know, they must have been got cracking on them while we were there, you see, operations here. I was only just a couple of bits in my leg, actually, where I'd blown up. I'd blown up several times, and I never thought I'd see England anymore, and yeah, I didn't. Well, you sort of didn't care, your mind was still a blank to a lot of things. And then instead of sending me back to my unit when I was, well, I thought I was all right, they sent me for a month at a hospital in Stirling.
To convalesce?
A convalescent for a month. They sent me there. I was there for a month, and I'm trying to think of the hospital. It got burnt out. Stirling, not far from Stirling. Oh, Dunblane. Yeah, funny, it come to me. Dunblane it was. Dunblane. It was a convalescent home. And they used to get artists in the hall there, you know, and they had a swimming pool in there. And, you know, to build you up a bit, I think, or something. And then, anyhow, I came back to my unit. After the month, I had a month there. Yeah, Dunblane, that's Stirling, isn't it? In Hotel Hydro had been burnt out, and they rebuilt it again during the course of periods, you know, since, I mean, it didn't burn out during the war, it was during the peacetime period. Hotel Hydro. I can remember that, Dunblane. It's funny, it comes to you now. Sometimes I go to bed at night, you know, and I think of a thing that I just can't think of. I think of it during the night.
Did you make a full recovery from your wounds?
Well, I made a full recovery from my wound, but I had a sort of nervous disposition. I used to get aggressive. With the blokes, you know. I used to get better, but I used to try and control it. I used to get very aggressive. But, I came back to the unit in any case. I reported back to the unit, and they sent me on leave, because I hadn't had no, since I had one before Christmas, you see. This is the next year now, in 1938, isn't it? And I had a week's leave, and then they sent me back to my unit. I was here, Hessel, all the way. And when I told my mum I'm going to, it's Hull, it's the address on the shoulder to it. She said, that stinking place, she said. She said, your father used to work up there during the First World War on the trains. You know, it's funny that, isn't it? And she said, it's a little stinking old village. So I thought, I always had that. Then that hole was a little old village. But when I was up at Hessel, we built in Hessel in the Weir. In the government, they were government buildings in the Weir, weren't they? A lot of government buildings. And we took them over. And I think there was a platoon of us in two rooms, just laying on the floor in palliasses. That's the old straw palliasses we had. Used to fill them with straw and lay them out, just like, wasn't as good as that, but yeah. But that's how we billeted. And we used to, in the church, you used to get a burner in the church, you know, the church right in the centre. We used to do the cooking just near the cemetery where the people have been buried. We used to cook our food in there.
Was the whole battalion at Hessel?
No, yes, but they're in different, all spread all over Hessel. They're in the big houses round the back. It's the Churchill Road, is it Churchill Road there? One Church Road or something like that. And that's working towards the back. Now, we did loads of training. Now, I was all right in the training side. 60-mile route matches, we do. And then they asked for volunteers for anti-tank units. And that was for, they're making companies up. And they were really, what do you call them now? Anyhow, they're making companies up for anti-tank units, and they had armoured vehicles and all like that. So I thought, oh, I'll volunteer for that. As you come out of the unit then, you see, and you were called the 4th Anti-Tank Squadron. A squadron, say, film belt, you see, anti-tank squadron. And that was for, I moved from there to Driffield. And we were in houses at Driffield, right in the base hospital there. That's when because I volunteered for these units, you see. Then they turned the anti-tank units into recce corps. So you was armoured, you was armoured units, you know. And I always remember the Beaverettes, Humberettes, and the old corned beef thing, we call them armadillos. They were, so I think about a 4-ton armoured car. All it had was about 2 inches of wood inside and a 1/4-inch plate outside, that was all round. But they're very dangerous, the armadillos, because you only had a little door you had to squeeze, and there used to be 7 blokes getting them, plus the driver. And they used to have slits round, it's just like a corn beating, slits round. And if it fell over anyway, you had a job, you was trapped inside of them. Could be trapped inside of them. Very dangerous. I didn't like them at all. Armadillos, they call them. And then you had the Humberettes, which do about 60 mile an hour. And then you had Beaverettes. Humberettes and Beaverettes. That was our main armament. Plus, 2-pound anti-tank guns. 2-pounders. I'd already seen them in France, so I knew what they were. And I was a 3-inch mortar then. I trained on the 3-inch mortar. You see, we trained on all different arms. And then they rigged up these Beaverettes with a twin tripod on in the car itself, with twin guns there. You used to fit them up. And they were dashing behind the enemy lines, caused as much... But, you know, as much trouble you can, then dash back again. That was what they do. You used to go and break the lines and come back. That was your job. And you was loaded up with grenades. You had them all round in the armoured car, you know, your grenades, 36 hand grenade. And they used to do patrolling all round here. Bridlington, Scarborough, early hours of the morning we used to go out. And then we were billeted that we... taken out the billets of Driffield, and we were put in the under canvas just out Driffield's RAF station. Haw-Haw called us babes in the woods. There was all different units. There was Lancashire Fusiliers, Royal Scots, Royal Norfolks, Manchester's. All units had been mixed up into one, and they made them into the 2nd Battalion Recce Corps. Then that's where the first, and the first badge was plastic, like a plastic brown one. Then they gradually got round to the brass one. I got one here.
If you no, like. No, don't get up, don't because you've got the mic on.
And then all of a sudden we've done the, I think they got orders to move down south. And they said to me, he called me in the office, the commanding officer, Mr. Harvey, you're going to be transferred to the Pioneer Corps. So I said, why, what for? I said, aren't I suitable? He said, don't ask me anything. He said, you're being transferred down with the Pioneer Corps, which are down in the Midlands. I've got a lot more to come yet, you know.
That's all right, carry on.
Which was in the Midlands. And this is how I come to be in Yorkshire. I didn't know Yorkshire. I'd never been before. I'd never travelled that far. And so I was a bit upset over that, to think I'd been trained. But so how it came about, he say, you're very versatile with the tools they use. He said, you're more or less, he said, you're an engineer. He said, you can train the others into the, because with me being working with the engineers on the, I knew a lot of their gadgets and all what they do, you know, the Royal Engineers. And so that was his excuse. So I said, well, why can't I come with the battalion? Why can't I stop? He said, I've just got my orders. He won't tell you, he said. He won't tell me. That upset me quite a bit. Anyhow, I said to him, well, I'm getting married. This is 1941. No. I mean, a lot of I probably missed a bit out. So, and I said, I'm getting married on the, when was it, in May. Got married on May the 5th in 1941. I was with a girl here and she was injured in the, I was on a night out here in Hull and she was injured. She got blown up and she got shrapnel in the womb, in mostly in the womb. It went right through her thigh and lodged in her stomach. Well, I was down here on the, not on a weekend, I just came down for the night, you see. So I was outside and I could hear this bomber, this was in Hull. I could hear this bomber run, even the alarm hadn't even got the, you know, the, what they call the sirens hadn't gone and at all and anything. And I said, sure, that's a German. You know, you can always tell, you can always tell a German plane for some reason. I'm sure that's German. So she was poorly. I don't know what it was, Montelis or what. She was poorly and she laid on, she was laying on the settee. I said, I'll just go outside and have a look. And the next minute, as soon as I got to the terrace, Guy's Terrace in Lunsford Street, on that side, it's in upstairs. And what happened, I had the swish of the bomb. That's all I had. I had the plane, so I had nowhere to go. I was out in the open, so I just flung myself on the roadside and just flung myself down. And the next minute, woof, all the lot went up, the whole terrace went up. And it fell in between. It didn't fall on the house, it fell in, but all the houses caved in, more or less. And I got up, I was all right. My legs were cut again. My legs were cut, me. I was full of soot and everything. I'd blacken and, you know, and I can hear them screaming and, you know, and I thought to myself, not again. And all I could see was just a pile of rubble. And I called her name out. I got hold of her sister. She lived in next door. She was screaming, and I had a little hand torch. She said, lend me your torch, lend me your torch. She said, I can't find Alf, I can't find Alf. It was her husband. So I said, here, then, it's a torch. You know, I did this all in my head, and I clambered on, I was calling her name, Mona her name was. I married her later on, anyhow. And she was the first casualty in the Children's Hospital in Park Street. What I did, I got hold of her, managed to get hold of her, and I couldn't talk to her because she was numb, she couldn't speak. And I threw her over my shoulder and managed to crawl back onto the road and round to the road, and little lad, only that size. I said, do you know where the hospital? Because I didn't. Hospital. He said, I'll show you, mister. And he walked all the way to the hospital with me. And I carried her in, they're all in the corridor, you know, and they're putting them, what they pulled the patients from up the other rooms and put them all in the corridor, laying there, you see. So the nurse come running to me. Oh, she said, put her down there. So she said, there's nothing you can do. She said, you best to go back and say, well, I was looking for a mother and father. Her father got hit in the head. Mother got blown in the fire, her mother, in the fireplace.